Coming up on today's show.
If you can't commit to being on that road and you can't commit to going and traveling state to state, town to town, honky tonk, venue to venue, then you shouldn't do it.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location in Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who released a single 2 months ago and has more new music in the works. He has continued to build an impressive resume, including performing at major festivals, sharing stages with country music heavyweights, and amassing millions of streams across digital platforms. His standout singles have landed on curated playlists, showcasing his ability to bridge the gap between tradition and evolution in country music. He has been seen at high-profile events, from the CMA Awards to the Daytona 500, and was even a guest on this show back in August 2022 on episode 444. You've been hearing his new single titled Set Me Free. Welcome back to Now Hear This Entertainment, Brandon Bing.
Hey, Bruce, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for making time to come by and sit and talk with me today. Let's get started by having you share first with the audience all about your newest single that was just playing called Set Me Free.
Yeah, had opportunity to really deep dive, I guess, going into the end of last year of what I was trying to accomplish in 2025. And when I came out with the Set Me Free record as the first song that I was going to release this year, I wanted to have something that was going to be a little bit more mid-tempo, you know, kind of ballad, more of a deeper cut. I felt that it would be an effective transition. I feel like there's a little bit of a paradigm shift going on right now. And I really want my audience and, you know, new listeners to be able to, you know, kind of extrapolate, you know, the bits and pieces from within me, you know, through my writing process. So I put a lot of time into that record of having something that was going to be a deeper cut, more vulnerable. It's more or less just like a plea of being in a situation in a, you know, somewhat toxic relationship. I feel that, you know, a lot of people, you know, across our society can, and music enthusiasts can identify with having a bad hand dealt, you know, in a relationship. Mm. And sometimes, you know, you got people that you seek out, you know, personal help and support or therapy, but sometimes, you know, you need a good song that can kind of put all the pieces together and make it make sense.
You know, a lot of songwriters will say, I want my songs to have universal appeal. I want it to apply to a lot of people in a lot of different scenarios. But I'm sitting here and I'm having to work as I'm listening to you say that and go, I wonder if it could be Set Me Free if it's someone that's stuck in a job that they can't stand. But is there such a thing as being a songwriter and saying, yeah, I get that about universal appeal, but sometimes you do have to just focus on this is Set Me Free from a bad relationship and that's all.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing, because I think, you know, I say this a lot of times to people that I feel that through music and just life in general, I feel like everybody has different situations and obstacles or adversity that they face. And I think that there's so many people that don't really have the confidence or the mouthpiece to sit there and be open and, I guess, unapologetic in how they respond to things. They're kind of, it's somewhat politically correct, or they just kind of walk a tightrope because they're afraid if they go a little too far and push the envelope, what is it going to do and what backlash am I going to get? So I do feel, to your point, that you do have to have records that are, hey, this is a subject matter, this is what we're attacking. But then on contrary, I think it's always good that even if that is the point, I think the beautiful part about music in general is that the listener can leave it open to interpretation, you know, and that kind of gives them a chance to have something that connects with them on an emotional lens.
Is Set Me Free a solo write or a co-write?
A solo write.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Very deep solo write.
And it's going to continue from here, right? Meaning you have another new single being planned for for release. When will that be? And what are you at liberty to disclose in terms of maybe a title, what the song is about? Is it a hard driving song? Is it a ballad? What might your fans, your followers be in store for?
Yeah, I haven't announced the name of it yet, but no, so it's going to be a continuation. It's going to really kind of direct people that have been with me since day one, back when I released my first single in 2019 till now in 2025. I had a lot of growth. I've had a lot of development through personal life experiences, through business relationships, and also just in my life effectively for my overall, you know, mental and physical well-being. So I've turned a page. You know, last year I kind of taste tested or dipped my toe with the audience as far as when I dropped Burnout at Both Ends in June, and I dropped To the Bone in July. And then so going forward, all these other songs that are coming is going to be a continuation in chapter two of my book on this journey. And I'm excited because I'm going to really be more intentional and more robust in my delivery, my productions, in my live show. I'm really excited this year to be able to bring those live shows to fruition, because over the last few years, there was just a lot of self-reflection. And then obviously we had the spout with going through COVID and a couple of our indirect variables that we weren't able to control. And so now I feel like I have a good, you know, hand on the reins to direct this thing.
Do you have a estimate, date, timeline, whatever for when this next song?
I'm thinking it's going to be right before summer. Like probably in the next, probably around May-ish.
Okay. And audience,
I'll give you May-ish.
As I always say, it's all the more reason to keep up with the guest. I always encourage you to keep up with the guest online. And in Brandon's case, it's so that you can see when he starts announcing the date is going to be. Whether it's your latest single or this next song that we're talking about now, what are things looking like these days in terms of video? Meaning, is there a music video in the pipeline possibly?
Yeah, I'm working on, you know, I got a lot of great friends in town that just have a lot of cool creative spaces and ideas that have been a really big support to me and helped me drive my vision. And I'm grateful to have them in my corner. And I'm looking to really give people, you know, being that storyteller as a writer and as an artist, bring a lot of these songs with a visual that can give people like, wow, like a good introspection of like, this is real.
Are you a songwriter that is already seeing the music video as you're writing it? Or are you kind of more of the mindset that, no, that's my art. I let the people who specialize in creating music videos, let them figure out what it should appear as on the screen.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of a little mixture of a few things. It's when I'm writing a record, I think the first and foremost for me when I write a record is not just that unapologetic raw authenticity in the lyrics, but how is that going to translate through production? Like, I'm already hearing certain instruments and ideas of how I can see that composition. And I'm taking that and connecting that to the premise of what's my live show, because I'm a big people person. I love being intentional. I love like looking into the fans and stuff in the audience and feeling like they feel I'm connected with them when they're hearing me sing and play. And also with my band, adding that back support. So, you know, we really try to have an explosive live show. And I feel like the video and the visualizers are kind of embedded within that. It's kind of organic. And then when we get into actually filming something, then I might have an idea of a general baseline, because since I'm so specific and intentional with my images, when I write the song kind of writes the video, if that makes sense. And then I just, whenever I work with other, you know, cinematographers, I always tell them, just like I tell my studio musicians, like, this is my idea, this is where I'm at, but the reason why you're such a, you know, the best in your craft and your art form is because you're bringing your creative talents. I wouldn't get those cool Easter eggs if I didn't give them the opportunity to just, you know, what's in their head at a moment. Maybe they have a crazy lick, or maybe the videographer has this cool little cut scene or background idea that they got. Let's try it. Like, let's guinea pig and have fun. And
like,
you know
that.
What? Those, I think, you know, I was telling my buddy the other day, Bruce, I was like, you know, you listen to a lot of these records in any genre, but specifically like old country, classic rock, specifically probably classic rock, you know, in the 70s and 80s. They didn't have the technology we have today. So, you know, when it came down to being in the studio, that was all analog. You know, that was like a one take. Like, a lot of those timeless records that we've listened to from a lot of our great bands, like your Skynyrd's and, you know, ZZ Top's and, you know, all that, you know, that different type of music, you know, if you really listen to those records, Rolling Stones, they were kind of like one take kind of deals. Mm. And I think those are awesome because you can't recreate that.
But getting back to when you said during the recording process and the writing, you're kind of already hearing, how do you make peace with, you could be writing a song and go, wow, you know what, when we get to the studio, like I can see that it would be great to put some steel guitar on this song. But then you go, you can have this battle with yourself where you can say, well, wait a minute. Like I can, if it were in Nashville, I can find somebody. But if I'm booked to play a show in Wyoming, like I'm not going to bring a steel guitar all the way with me, a player all the way there for one song. So you don't want the recording to suffer. So how do you make peace with all that?
Okay, yeah. So you're saying from like the production to the live performance. So like I have my core band. And then if, you know, a lot of the times, you know, because of where I am as an act, if I'm headlining my own show, you know, I have any of the auxiliary parts that you're talking about, you know, what we'll do is we'll just try to find something. I might extend and give like an extra four bars, or I might just let, like, for example, my fiddle player is always with me. So, you know, I let him come out there and do what he's got to do. So Quinn kind of takes the reins on that. And then same thing with like any of my lead guitars, you know, I'll let them have the opportunity to just create a unique kind of specially experienced through that live show.
I love it.
And then I feel like, hey, the thing that I care about most is that my audience knows that if that record's going to be have that drive, then I'm going to bring it on the stage. And then more importantly, when it comes down to the record, that they know that I'm going to sound like the record.
But I still love your answer because you're giving people essentially the best of both worlds. You're saying, I really do hear steel guitar as I'm writing this, so I'm not going to sacrifice it and leave out steel guitar on the recording. But then because I may not be able to duplicate it exactly live, I'm going to give one of my other players exactly what you just said before that, the opportunity to be creative and specialize in what they do and thrive on that fiddle or thrive on that guitar and fill where we otherwise would have had steel guitar if we had someone. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Appreciate it.
This episode is releasing the day that I am returning home from Las Vegas, which wraps up a trip that started back on March 25 and saw me initially in Nashville and then in Chicago. Next month, I will be in Miami. Actually, the event I'll be at is in Miami Beach. There is no cost to attend, so come see me at the Business Show / B2B Marketing Expo. It is at the Miami Beach Convention Center on May 7 and 8. I will be speaking there. Plus, I will have a booth for Now Hear This, my PR agency. Go to b2bmarketingexpo.us for details. Keep up with the podcast, the weekly e-newsletter, and the official at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account for details on other dates and cities for locations where I will be throughout 2025, all because I would love the opportunity to meet you in person and say a face-to-face hello and thank you for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. Brandon, I'm certainly going to encourage the audience to go back and listen to our first interview. And folks, I will have a link on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, to episode 444. So you can go to that interview that Brandon and I recorded in August of 2022. But regardless of whether we covered this then or not, it has been 2.5 years. So present day, tell us who you're writing with, and is it always just for your own projects, or are you sometimes in a write knowing that it's specifically for a certain artist, or maybe one of those free-for-alls where someone in the write is going to say, I'd really like to cut this one. What does all that look like here in the first part of 2025?
Yeah, so, you know, I've had a lot of great opportunities already getting started as we kick off 25. Had an opportunity to write with some very good, you know, writers that I've looked up to. An artist, my buddy Ryan Nelson, Jordan Fletcher over at Seagull, had an opportunity to work with my buddy Eric Van Houten, you know, on behalf of like Warner. Also, my buddy Noah West, he was over at Pier. So I'm just consistently doing that. One of my ace of spades is my boy Noah Gibbons. He's kind of been with me since day one, you know, on the writing scene. And I've just enjoyed doing that. And several other writers, artists, you know, I've had the opportunity as of late to get into rooms. I mean, I've probably been writing, I don't know, I'd say since the latter part of January of this year till now, it's been probably at least probably 5 to 6 times a week. Mm. So I've been really steady with staying busy while I'm not on the road right now. And I'm really trying to take advantage of those opportunities to learn from other great writers that are in town that are more seasoned, and that try to get myself in the rooms where I can position, you know, getting a song that's going to be more in line to get cut, you know, because I feel like that catalog is real important. You know, the one thing I found is I love being on the road. I love being that road dog mentality and playing live shows. But I also love the business and the community aspect of it. You know, when I came to this town 5 years ago, it was trying to find a way to not really just fit in, just more or less, how are you going to let people identify with who are you and like, why are you here? Kind of like, what can you bring to the table? And I feel like I've built a lot of great friendships that, you know, are going to, you know, hopefully last a lifetime, and also do a lot of great things with those individuals, guys and gals. But more importantly, it's given me a platform to really see like who I am as a person, as a writer, as an artist, and really contribute to this Music City, you know, community and culture from the writing and the publishing house side. Cause, you know, without the writers and without great songs, you don't have hit records. So, you know, what are you going
to
perform?
When you have to write 5 or 6 times a week, to me, that sounds like a tremendous amount of pressure to always have new ideas to show up with. Just talk to us about that, because I think that's something that can get easily overlooked. It sounds good to say I got 5 or 6 writes this week, but oh my gosh, I got 5 or 6 writes this week. I got to bring some ideas.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole thing is, you know, I'm a big observer as much as I'm a, you know, big person when it comes down to being, you know, kind of that people person, life of the party kind of deal. I love being in social settings, but I'm always looking at everything around me. You know, I'm always trying to read things. I'm always trying to listen to events or things that I can correlate to my life. I look at experiences I go through every day, good or bad. And I try to just, it forces me as a human and as a creative to be more vulnerable. And that's why I'm really excited about this next chapter in my music, in my career, is I can really use everything that I've endured and kind of rip the Band-Aid off and just get a little bit bloodier with it for people to really see like a deeper inside perspective of what goes on in my brain, you know, cause it's a crazy place to be up there. But if I have great writers that can help me pull those thoughts out, then it makes the writes a lot of fun. And we write those records relatively quick. I mean, we typically write in a 3-hour block, and sometimes we knock a song out in 30 minutes to an hour. So I just try to always come up with, you know, either melodies or hooks, and at the very minimum, bring a concept to the table.
Is there such a thing in Nashville as somebody, I'm going to say, trying to hide in a write? They know they're going to write with 2 other people or 3 other people, and they go, I don't have an idea, but I'll just kind of hang back. And the other people, they'll have ideas. Is that, I would think that's a bad idea. Does that happen?
It does happen. Like, I think sometimes it's kind of like a writer's block. Here's my 2 cents. If you can't bring something into the room as either like a progression or melody or a hook or a concept, then at least like as those other writers are in the room helping create what the song's going to be for that write, once you start getting lines down, like do everything you can to try to help craft those lines. How do you make that line better? Is there something, is there some type of wordplay or alliteration or in rhyme or something that you can put that's just going to make it a little bit more impactful? Sometimes all it takes is one line, you know? And, you know, I think some people think that you have to write the whole thing, and that's not true. Cause you know, if you were to come in and you were a writer and you had, and it was your project you're writing, like yesterday I was writing with Clark Hill and, you know, Morgan Greenlee, and we were over at the ASCAP spot writing, and he has a new project that he's working on. And in the midst of that, he already had the first verse, you know, like he already had the concept, he had the verse. So all we had to do is really put the meat on bones, build the chorus, really break that down. And, you know, when we did that, then we used, you know, 2 male perspectives, 1 female perspective, and did that little back and forth battle, like, hey, maybe 2-on-1 and or all 3 in alignment. And it just made the song work, you know. And by the time we were done, 2 hours later, that song was, you know, fire. So
I like it. I like it. There's a really cool video on your Instagram from last November and the CMA Awards, the TV broadcast, and you clearly visible sitting in the front row. Take us through that night and your whole experience at that event.
Man, that's funny. Man.
Because I believe you've been to multiple CMA awards. Yes.
I have. Ever since I've been to town, I've been to every one of them. Yeah, no, that was a crazy experience. You know, I was down on the floor. I was sitting with one of my like mentors and reps over at BMI, you know, Shannon Sanders. And we're sitting there and Ashley Gorley's right behind me and, you know, a big hit writer and, you know, a huge inspiration. And I'm sitting there just like looking at just, I just observe, you know, and I'm just taking it all in. And what was it? BZ had just got off the stage from doing his little set and Cody had just won Album of the Year. And that was an emotional moment for me because, you know, being an independent artist still and really, you know, following his journey as an artist through his career. I remember just listening to all his records from the beginning, you know, Cowboys Like Us, you know, Grass Stains, all that, just all the way up to, you know, now we're, you know, Leather and everything else. It's just some fence posts, like all these great records he's put out. And man, just I teared up because he put so much work in, you know, not just, I've seen him sick as a dog at the Mandalay Bay, like when we were in Vegas for the NFR. And I mean, he was hacking up left and right on stage. And that dude just don't quit, you know, and he just got that dog in him. Like he's there for his wife. He's there for his kids. He's there for his community in Texas. He's there for country music. I've had the blessing to become good friends with, you know, Jackson and Howie and his management, you know, over the years. And Jackson's been a great friend and mentor. And they were sitting side by side that night. And I remember just looking up and I wanted to go congratulate him. But in the middle of commercial break, they left. And when they left, this lady, I guess, like that was controlling like where the nominees were at. Like she comes up and I was sitting there probably 5-6 rows back or something like that. And then next thing you know, she's just like, hey, you. And then Shannon's like, hey, go. Like, and I get up and she pulls me up there. And next thing you know, I'm sitting down in Cody's seat. And it was just like a moment in time for me. Like I was like, I was speechless. You know, everything around me in that remaining part of the show, I guess the last half hour, really just brought everything full circle for me and really showed me why I'm doing what I do. I had an opportunity to open for at a round in town for Ashley McBride when she was doing one at Live Oak and this few years back, and I had a chance to open at the Suwannee River Jam for Jelly Roll and back in Florida, and Chris Stapleton was next to him, and I was just looking at all these greats that just really continue to carry that torch and make country music what it is and why it's such an art form of storytelling. And, you know, it was just a cool moment to sit there, someone that I looked up to, and then see him win, then be in that seat and just look at everybody around me. And then Peyton and Luke are on stage, and I'm a huge, you know, Colts fan, so Peyton was up there. It was just, again, speechless, man. I'm like lost words, but at the end of the day after that, and I started getting hit on my phone, hey, man, you're on TV, sending me pictures and video clips. And then I was like, you know what, man, 2025, we're going to knock the hinges off the door, you know, just. And I really feel like this shift is going to give me a platform and opportunity to really stake my claim for the last 5 years I put into this thing.
Well, here's what else I'm hearing from that. So you're sitting 5 rows back, and then they move you up. And the next place that you get moved up to is the stage. You're up there accepting an award. And so I think what you're saying is you watch Cody, and you go, look at him sick as a dog performing anyways. Look at how hard he works. And the result of his tireless efforts already ends up on stage. So I need to keep doing that, and I'm going to go from the 5th row to the 1st row to being on stage, and I'm going to accomplish that.
Facts.
And audience, when you just heard Brandon refer to Luke and Peyton, go back. I'm going to put a link on the show page for Brandon's episode. I interviewed Karen Kozowski, and she's a producer here in town, and they came and did an episode of that show. Luke was there, not Peyton Manning, but I actually went and watched that episode because I wanted to see Karen and everything. So I'll put a link, audience, so you can go and listen to my interview with Karen Kozowski. But let's stay where we are in this conversation, Brandon, because speaking of the CMA Awards, what about CMA Fest? Will you be there? If yes, do you have any specific details you can share in terms of where people can find you to meet you or see you perform? I think you performed last year.
Yeah, I was there. Well, and then this year I'm going to be, I don't have all the particulars yet, but I'm going to be there. I'll definitely be there. I don't know what capacity yet. So still waiting to hear back on a few things because we're in the process of putting shows together. So I'm working on putting shows together from May to the end of this year. And depending on our show schedule, is going to determine what opportunities that I'll be able to take advantage of during that week of CMA Fest. But I'll definitely be here to make appearances, and I'll find some things that I'll be able to pop up in. At the very least, I'll probably do a couple rounds or something in town, some of our songwriter spots. And then I'll make sure that all that information is communicated on all my socials and everything for people to come and see me.
Awesome. Awesome. I am joined today on location in Nashville by singer, songwriter, guitar player Brandon Bing. Visit his official website at brandonbingmusic.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talk about new music. Get Brandon's original music from the likes of Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, and more. Keep up with him online for details on where and when you can go see him perform live. Social media-wise, there are links on brandonbingmusic.com for his Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. You heard me mentioning that I will be speaking at the event in Miami next month. If you have been listening to the show for a while, thank you, of course, and you know that I present at a lot of different events. Already this year, I have spoken at PodFest Multimedia Expo, the San Francisco Writers Conference, and the Las Vegas Writers Conference. If you would like to have me speak at an event that you are a part of, check out speakerbrucew.com. There is a video on there as well as a list of events and locations where I have spoken. And obviously, you can make contact through there to start a conversation about the event, date, location, details, etc. Again, that is speakerbrucew.com. I would love the opportunity to be a part of whatever you or someone you know might be planning. Brandon, when you were on this show 2.5 years ago, you talked about Bangtail Whiskey, which is your own brand. Give us the latest with that in terms of any exciting developments since we first talked about it back in August 22.
Yeah, back then to now, got distribution for Bangtail in Florida, back where I'm from, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas. Been working on building relationships through all the different Total Wines, got all the Total Wines in Texas. Also continuing to expand and work with different artists. I had the opportunity to work with another big inspiration to me, which was Justin Moore. He had a song with a friend of mine, Priscilla Block, which was called You, Me, and Whiskey. And I was able to have my liquor like inside the video. So if you haven't checked out the You, Me, and Whiskey video, check that out at a minute and 26 seconds. and you'll see Bangtail front and center. And it was just really cool, man. It was his first duet. And it was his 12th number one. So that was cool to have my, you know, product a part of a, you know, a monumental achievement for him. And also at the same time, I've worked with, you know, other artists recently. A friend of mine, Palmer Anthony, is collaborating with me with my whiskey. And I've worked with several others in between with several camps. If you go on the social media, you'll kind of see what's in the repertoire of everything we went through. But yeah, a lot of cool, exciting things. I got new merch and stuff coming. I'm updating some stuff on the site, working on some other blends for a couple other products to add to the tool belt. So it's not just one SKU. And then just continue to expand that distribution channel. We also have shipping, so you can ship nationwide. So if you go to my bangtail.com site, they can buy it. And then I have a liquor distributor that, you know, can ship as well.
Is there such a thing as, in the book world, you can walk into a bookstore and say, I'm looking for this book by this author, and they say, we don't carry it, but we can order it for you. Is there such a thing as someone who's listening to our interview going into, say, a bar or maybe even like their local mom and pop liquor store and asking for Bangtail whiskey and being told we don't have that? Is there such a thing as convincing that bar or that mom and pop liquor store that there's a way they can start carrying Bangtail whiskey in their bar or in their mom and pop liquor store?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Bruce. So like when it comes to that, it's kind of like the old effective, you know, that whole guerrilla marketing, like bootstrapping kind of mechanism. That's what I did when I got Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and Texas. I literally just knocking doors, pounding pavement, and, you know, bring a bottle and taste it. Obviously, if it's somebody else, like a patron that goes to a show, fan goes out to a local liquor store or something, and they don't care because I don't have distribution, then they can, you know, send me a DM. You know, I handle all my socials. So anybody that reaches out to me on social media, music or whiskey, it's all going to be me. It's not going to be somebody else speaking for me unless those like crazy AI tools kick on there. So if you see the AI tool kicking, then just ignore it and I'll get to it. I promise. But yeah, just get a distro's name or a contact. Like if it's XYZ liquor store, hey, what's your distributor? Do you have a contact there or an email?
Okay.
They forward it to me. Then I can send the stuff over, give the one sheet, and then set up like schedule what they call like a tasting. And do like a, I'll do like a pop-up event, bring the bottles in. They get to kind of see how people react to it. At that point, then I can get a distributor set up and do, be in their portfolio as a product to be able to distribute across the state.
But you know, audience, the reason that I'm bringing this up is not only just to get an update from Brandon from the August 2022 interview, but think of the doors that this opens for him musically, because now you can call that place and you can say, let me come by and we'll do a tasting. And you can say, you do know that I'm a country music artist, right? I'd do a show in your parking lot if you want me to. And now all of a sudden it turns into a whole lot more than just getting them carrying your whiskey.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that too, because that's really been one of the strategies that I've put in place, you know, as I built not just, you know, Brandon Bing, but the Hoss Nation community and this whole Church of Heathens thing that I'm building as well for my fan base, is trying to show them that community connection point. Coming in there, supporting local businesses, you know, being a serial entrepreneur myself, you know, I want to be able to do the same thing just like I've done in my solar company and my whiskey company. It's like I want to be able to give them something where they're like, hey, he's just like us. He's not going to be better than us or try to act like that. He wants to come in here and, you know, I'll get down and dirty just like it. I come in, set up my own booths. I break them down. I talk to every person, never meet a stranger. You know, I want everybody to know that, like, our community of like what Hoss Nation is just hardworking go-getters. And, you know, at the end of a hard work week after punching a clock, 40, 60 plus hours, you can have a good, you know, sip of Bangtail and support original live music, which is what I built the brand around, was Bangtail whiskey. You know, my buddy Rob Harville helped me come up with the idea, you know, live music on the rocks, you know, and really to have a product that can streamline to the back end of what that's, you know, the story behind the song. And that's what we're doing, man. We're building a movement.
I want to ask you about Florida, but hear me out on this so that you and the audience know where I'm coming from. We heard back on episode 444 about some of what you have done there. What I'm wondering, though, is how much time do you spend there? How often do you go back there? Because do you ever worry that you're missing out by not being here when you are down there? So many artists move to Nashville so they can give all their time to being in Music City. Do you wonder if people will convince themselves, Brandon's not always here? What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't really, that might have been a play for a small period of time, maybe around in and out of COVID. But where I'm at now, I mean, I live here and I got my house down there, obviously, but I'm working on like this year's tour schedule. The shows that I'm booking, I'm looking to really saturate my Florida market. So when I make stints down there and see family and friends down there, it doesn't affect my workflow here. So I make it very matter of fact to anybody, you know, this is where I'm at, is in Nashville. I'm putting in my time. I'll be wherever I got to be. I'll write, and, you know, whether it's five, six, eight times, however many times I got to write a week. But when it comes down to touring, you know, anybody that's a household name, which is what I'm working to build and become, they're not sitting here in Nashville. You know, Nashville is where the business takes place, but where the business is outside of, unless you're just strictly a writer or a producer or in like the sync licensing kind of deal, it's out there on the road. You know, if you can't commit to being on that road and you can't commit to going and traveling state to state, town to town, honky tonk, venue to venue, then you shouldn't do it, because you can come here and play the Broadway scene. There's nothing against the Broadway. I got plenty of buddies that play Broadway. I got plenty of musician buddies that play Broadway to keep their chops up. I think it's a great tool. There's a difference in getting called into a Chitlin circuit, you know, versus putting yourself in position for being a household name. If you want to play the 100 songs of Broadway and do covers and tributes, you can do that. You can also go to your hometown, and no matter where you're from, like I can go back to Florida and I tell buddies all the time, they're like, I'm like, if I wanted to just play every beach bar up and down the coast and do covers and be a tip jar and all that and come home, then cool. And also there's different business models, right? Mm-hmm. Some people like that. There's some artist buddies of mine, they do original music, they write, but really like they enjoy going to your Floribamas and your different types of like the Bowery's and places like that, and just being the cover band, you know, and they're content and they make a good career and they still get to see their families and they get to write good music and they can potentially still get cuts or whatever that looks like for them in that ecosystem. For me, I'm not here to do that. I'm here to, you know, write the best music, learn from the best writers and be in the best rights to pitch and get the best songs that we can get cut so we can build a catalog. And also as an artist, I'm here to build a brand that can be marketed that's going to have staying power. You know, I'm not doing this for a couple of years, 5 years, 10 years. I've been here 5 years. I'm doing this so the next 30 years can be extremely impactful and I can leave my footprint behind. And then once I hit that part, then I can come back when I get to that age, you know, and look back, you know, and be like when you're in your 50s, 60s or whatever, and I can like mentor and help other artists and creators and really be a part of that vessel that's here in Music City.
Well, let's face it. You did just finish telling us a few minutes ago that you're writing 5 to 6 times a week. So obviously people know you are firmly, firmly entrenched in the Nashville music community. Number two, as you already said, but it bears repeating, when you start getting a lot of songs in your catalog, you are gone on the road. And so you could levy the same charge against someone else and say, yeah, but so-and-so's never here much. Yeah, that's because they're out on the road performing their original songs that they've worked so hard to build up. And number three is, I think you'd be foolish not to continue to leverage all that you have in Florida and say, I have places I can go play my original music down there that other people wouldn't if they turn their back on where they came from when they moved to Nashville.
Right, right.
I like it. Okay. Big breath for me, big breath for you.
Sure.
Big, long question coming up here, but it's one that honestly, I don't think I've ever asked this in 580 plus episodes of the show. I'm proud of myself. This is creative. This is clever, but I would love to get your perspective on something else that is tremendously representative of the original music scene in Nashville, which is writers' rounds. Unbeknownst to the casual patron in a given establishment on almost any night of the week here, there is a lot happening on stage during a writer's round in no particular order. One, a songwriter might be testing out a new song he or she just wrote. Number two, he or she is trying to gain fans, followers, etc. Number three, he or she is listening to what the other songwriters are performing that night to get a sense for what others like them are writing. Number four, they're hoping to get noticed by other writers who might ask them to write with them and or maybe play in a writer's night that they host. And number five, oh yeah, they're trying to enjoy themselves up there. Man, that is a lot, Brandon. Can you walk us through being on stage with all that going on? And oh, by the way, having to remember chords and lyrics.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. It's beyond just being a lot. It sometimes feel, I think sometimes it can get intimidating and you feel almost like it's impossible, but anything worth having is worth working for and working towards. So it's like one of those things that the singer-songwriter part of our community is unique in that we're writing all the time. We're, you know, playing all these different chords and progressions. So when you're there, it's your chance to, again, be that storyteller, connect with that audience, the other male and female writers that are up on that stage that you're sharing with in your round. You get an opportunity to, maybe they did something that was like really just had good wordplay, or they had a cool melody or something, or you really like that lick or progression, and it just stimulates all these cool ideas. And I think that's the creative space. Like, you're up there with people. What takes the wall and the discomfort away is you're up there with other people doing the exact same thing as you. So you're all up there together, just enjoying it, having a good time. You're trying to engage with that crowd, trying to figure out what they like, what they don't like. What I like is sometimes, like, we'll get up there and play a song, and then next thing you know, it was like the other week I was doing one, my buddy, you know, Ori, Cornbread Cowboy, and Josh Terry, they were doing a round, and I got a chance. I hadn't played with him in a while. My buddy Connor Sweeney, he was up there, and it was just kind of cool. You know, he's back with his family doing his thing. He comes in and out of town, I'm up here, and then we got a chance to hop on, be on the same round, you know? And it was just like one of those moments where you're just like, hey, man, I get to be here with your buddies, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're having the fun, and Arrow's playing. It's like, all right, you want to start first? He's looking at me. I was like, I'll start first. And so I start, and it's like, all right, let me do something that's maybe kind of a little, you know, ballady, you know, kind of chill. And then, like, we kind of work into a groove. And then next thing you know, then everybody down the line kind of follows in order, right? Like, if I start with a ballad, typically the next person will organically just go to a ballad because it's kind of like that's what the round's going to be. Then maybe I come back around, do an up tempo, and they do it. So you get to like break people out of their shell, and it's a lot of fun, man. And you're meeting people, you're seeing great musicians when they do, you know, showcases. And then there's, you know, every now and again, you get different people within in the industry that might come in and pop in and out. And that's the cool thing because you get to network and you get to build, again, that business side of things. Like, they're like, okay, and they get to know you. You can grab coffee or lunch, maybe grab a drink. And next thing you know, they start building a little internal, like, industry team coming out. And they're like, man, oh, Brandon's playing or so-and-so is playing. And then come to this round. And they just kind of keep re-inviting. And it's just fun.
But I love that you brought up that last point for a couple reasons. Number one, I read off five different things that are going on up here. Audience, I'm making the crazy motion around my head. All those five things are going on when you're sitting on stage in that writer's round. And then on top of it is I'm doing this in Nashville, which is one of the cities, Nashville, Los Angeles, Vegas. I'm not even so sure about New York, where there's a really good chance that old expression, you never know who might be in the audience, is going on. And I can attest to this personally. I mean, I had a client that was playing down in a coffee shop in Florida, and a realtor made a great connection for me, for her, to a top writer in Los Angeles. Yeah. And that's in Florida. So every writer's round, Brandon Bing is getting up on stage here in Nashville, and he's got these five things going through his head. And then there's the sixth one, which is, okay, no pressure, Brandon, but I don't know who might be here tonight. That's like, I like this Brandon Bing guy. I'm going to pay a little bit more attention to him. It's like, somehow you have to relax and have fun, which it sounds like you're saying, if it's people you know, it makes it a little bit easier to kind of ease into that round.
Yeah. And if it's people you don't know, then you just, again, you just kind of treat it like a live show. You know, there's a lot of times you play a live show and you're in environments and, you know, new venues you've never played. So you're trying to win that crowd over because, you know, you might come to a show and bring three buddies with you. I don't know your three buddies. I know you. And it's cool. It's like, oh, I see Bruce. Like, and Bruce is in my corner. But his three buddies, like, they're coming because they're coming with Bruce to hang out for a night. Yeah. But they could completely be turned off by me.
Yeah.
So it's like, I got to find a happy medium. And I think that's another reason why I love just being able, you know, the storytelling is good because, you know, it gives people a vulnerable perspective of you because they don't know you. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know somebody, how do you get to know them? You got to build rapport. So,
wow,
you know, that's the fun part. And then to take it to an end, it's just kind of like, hey, they're getting to kind of see you on stage. And then right after you're done, next thing you know, you're at the merch booth, rubbing elbows, shaking hands, hearing their stories. And when you give them that time, you know, you got to build it one fan at a time, you know, and if you build it one fan at a time and you focus on that and you're intentional about that, then those people are going to be in your corner and they're going to be loyal every time you put a release out, every time you do a merch drop, every time you come to a show.
Yeah. Now they're going to be storytellers and they're going to be playing your music and they're going to tell people not only is this a really cool song, but the guy who you hear performing it. And then they're going to talk about the story of, I talked to him at his merch table. I saw him perform live and we had this really nice conversation together. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's just from
one connection
at one show.
That's facts.
Yeah. Speaking of some fun performing live, let's go back to something you did right after our first interview, because even though it was more than 2 years ago, I'm sure this was a highlight, a really special memory for you. I'm referring to the fact that you were going to Denmark to perform as part of the Nashville Nights International Songwriters Festival. Tell us all about that trip.
That was crazy. That's so funny you brought that up because I was literally talking about Denmark the other day. And I went out there and it was Blue Foley, Bobby Pinson, Bridget Tatum. And, you know, they all helped put on this Nashville Nights and Terry Joe Box. And it was a great time being able to go to Denmark and fly into Copenhagen. I've never been to Europe, first time. So that was interesting, you know. And I had to get driven down to Odense, was the town. It was called the town of Odense. And I went there. Went to all these venues, had a lot of fun. And then I played a few shows and I had one at this place. There was a venue called Storms. And it was kind of like one of those, like, kind of those big, like, food court kind of things. But there was just like a stage and like chairs all around. And everybody's like all these different, like, breweries, like getting all these beers. I was just like, all these different, like, beers. I'm like, all right, this is going to be fun. Like, beer, food, people. Like, what can go wrong with this? And there was probably a good solid 300-400 people that were there,
whoa,
which was a really good amount of people at that venue. I'd never been. I was kind of concerned because it was a rainy day for that time of the year. It seemed in September, it was kind of frigid cold a little bit. And, but no, it turned out great. I did an acoustic set, and there was this guy, he was sitting right in the front row, and I'll never forget. He was from Fort Myers, Florida.
What?
And I was just like, wait, what? He had been following me since I dropped my first song, Sunday Funday. And like, he's like, man, I saw Sunday Funday. Then I hopped on with the Florida Man EP. And he's like, dude, he's like, my daughter's over here. He's like, he had been there at that time. Wow. It was probably like 12, 13 years or something. He had been out there living in Denmark, married a Danish woman, you know, and had some buddies that were like they were back down in Fort Myers and stuff like that. And he would go back and forth to Florida, like, I think like a couple times a year for like a week or two or something. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he lives in Denmark. And he sat there front and center. Mm. And it was one of the coolest things I was like, man, like, you never know where you are on this globe. Like, with 8 billion people, it's like 1 degree of separation. Wow. And he was like, man, you know, I'm just so proud of you. He's like, you just keep doing it for the U.S. and doing it for Florida. I was like, hell yeah, man, dude. This is awesome. Cool. And
that's awesome.
It was a blast, dude.
Just like the question about writer's nights, I really don't ask this one either. So let's give this a go. Since I'm here in Nashville and I get here somewhat regularly, Luke Combs opened a bar downtown. Now Jelly Roll has done the same. Eric Church has Chiefs. Florida Georgia Line has their place. The list goes on. How much do the Brandon Bings of the world look at those artists and say, okay, here's what's obviously working for them. I need to start writing more songs like that.
Yeah, so I think, and that kind of goes back earlier, you know, in our talk today of just that this paradigm shift, right? I feel like there's a formula, and then there's, you know, what's radio and commercial, and then there's, you know, what's going to be good for sync licensing opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you have to find a way to expose yourself to all that. Mm-hmm. And then you just got to funnel in based off your style. You got to be in the right rooms, because who you just mentioned, going from Jelly Roll to Church to, you know, Luke, you know, it's just, there's three different styles there, you know. Mm-hmm. Church and Luke are semi-similar, but Church is still a little bit more outlaw, you know, in that aspect overall, you know, if you look at his catalog. So I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, you got to be in the place where you know that you're going to be writing towards artists underneath that niche. If you want to write in multiple niches, that's fine, because like with anything, it's a numbers game, right? The more you swing, the more chance to knock it out of the park. But I think ultimately what they're doing is really understanding the business. You know, it's not just touring. It's not just having the songs. You need all that to tour. Mm-hmm. You need the songs to tour. You need the listeners and the followers to sell tickets, to sell merch. All those things come. But as you're doing that, then the connection point is, how do I build longevity? Because there's only a certain amount of years that you can road dog, you know, 100%, 100%, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you take someone like Elaney, who's done like 200 dates in a year. It's a lot. You know, it's a lot on your vocal. It's a lot in general. And you got to be able to do it sparingly and be impactful, because you don't want your performances to suffer. Mm. But then they're looking into veins of, hey, how can I create other forms of income that are going to be representative of the people that support my brand? Like Chief, you know, Eric Church made Chiefs, you know, Luke Combs obviously is big as it was Hurricane. So it's, you know, category 10, you know, Jelly Roll, you know, he has this whole thing with Bunny, you know, so there's these specific, you know, pockets that they're branding or co-branding to leverage their fan base. And then obviously, since Nash is such a hub and a transit town between Broadway, then they're getting effectively all those people staying in touch with their artist brand on a regular basis.
But I like at the start of that answer, you were saying like, yeah, pay attention to what they're doing, how their writing is looking, and then filter out the part that still makes it authentic to you. Because you could say, I'm going to just copy what FGL does. Well, there already is one FGL. You can't be them also. You got to put your own personality, your own experiences, your own vulnerabilities into it. So I like that you're saying, you can look at what their writing looks like and who they're writing with, but at some point in time, you got to bring yourself into the lyrics.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that at the end of the day, just to your point, is the fact that, you know, nobody wants to have a carbon copy. You know, the carbon copy and the, like, all the greats that have already done it, you know, there's not going to be another George Jones. You know what I mean? Like, that's George Jones. You know, there's not going to be another Johnny Cash. That was a Johnny Cash or a Patsy Cline. They made a staple for who they are. I mean, prime example, you take Hank Senior and look at, you know, Bo Cephas. You know, there's a significant difference between that 40s traditional, you know, kind of semi-yodeling kind of country twangy to the more outlaw, you know, rebel kind of, you know, mindset. But both had extremely successful careers. I mean, obviously, Hank Jr. had a much more long one because, you know, Hank Sr. wasn't around nearly as long, but they made an impact.
Clarify for me, my apologies if I should have known this. Are you currently in a publishing deal? And if no, is it something you're aiming for? And if you're not, just educate us on why that would not be something that you'd be pursuing.
Yeah. So, no, for me, I'm definitely looking for, you know, a publishing opportunity if it makes sense.
Okay.
At the very least, you know, being able to be in the rooms and contribute and write with those writers at those publishing houses and continue, like I said earlier, to grow and just be better and better. But I want to come in and bring value. You know, I'm not here to just get a deal because, oh, I want a pub deal or I want a record deal. Like, I want to be with the people in those publishing houses or those record labels where it's like, hey, I really believe in Brandon Bing. I love his vision. I love his style. I love what he's building. We want to be a part of this. We want to use our tools and resources and industry experience to help elevate him to be, you know, the hit the highest level of achievement that he can sustain and ultimately, you know, be a part of that historical footprint in Music City.
So. I like it. We're going to close today with another one of Brandon's original songs, one titled To the Bone. Brandon, before I let you go and we play that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Unhinged. It's just, this is, I've carved out my own space, had a lot of buddies in the Texas and Red Dirt scene, and coming from Florida and being from a pocket, you know, where, you know, Rob Thomas went to my high school for Matchbox 20. You had, you know, Fred Durst, Limp Bizkit that was up in Jacksonville, like having all those different influences and stuff. And then, you know, also with the, you know, John Anderson grew up around the corner, you know, from where I grew up in Longwood over in Apopka. So, you know, I wanted to find something that was going to make me really stand out in country music and also be a face for my home state in Florida. And so I've created, you know, instead of Red Dirt, I call Black Dirt Music, and it's where the sand meets the mud, and it's gonna, you know, gonna rock your face off. And To the Bone is a major, you know, punch to show people like this is the type of gas in the tank that Brandon's got. And we're just, that was even a slow drip, we just scratching the surface.
Solo write or co-write To the Bone?
Solo write.
Okay. Great to have you back on the show. Thank you for coming by today. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, appreciate it, Bruce.
You bet. Folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Brandon Bing. Do visit his official website at brandonbingmusic.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. At the start of the show, you heard me in the intro saying that his music has gotten millions of streams across digital platforms. Look for the links on his website for Apple Music and Spotify, to name just two platforms where you can hear his music. Keep up with Brandon online, not only for details on where and when you can go see him perform live, but to stay up on announcements that he makes regarding the release of new music. Connect with him through social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram, all of which you will find links for on his website. For that matter, tell Brandon that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you are still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen, week after week, year after year, 11 years with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It is simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 582. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Brandon Bing. This is the one he just talked about. It's called To the Bone.
I love you. I hate you. Can't go through this shit anymore.